freshly luscious, lemony listeners. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 162, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your irrefutably irreplaceable, irresistible irregulars, irradiating iridescence and feeling irie.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris. You've had a lot of stevia ginger ale, Karen. Are you sure you're going to be okay?
Just three.
I'm on
camp
number three.
Oh, man.
Oh, finally, all four of us are back. We had a bit of traveling.
Yeah.
Combined. Colin, you and I were both in Utah, but different parts of Utah.
Yeah, we had the trips planned totally separately. I was doing some desert hiking, and you were running a marathon.
Did you have Utah's finest fry sauce?
What?
They're famous for fry sauce. So I was looking at, like, what is some special, like, Utah-only food.
Yeah.
We know Jell-O is a big Utah.
Yeah.
But you can get Jell-O.
That's not Utah-only. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Fry sauce.
What's fry sauce?
Is it mayonnaise and ketchup?
It is plus other stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Some spices. So it doesn't taste directly like I just mixed up ketchup and mayonnaise.
Which is not bad.
It's actually pretty good.
Is it spicy or sweet?
It is a little bit spicy, a little bit sweet.
That's cool. I want some.
I didn't have any fry sauce.
But you were camping.
Yeah, I was camping. This is interesting. Right. I was traveling around Zion Canyon National Park and Bryce Canyon National Park.
Did you poop in a bag or whatever it is you do when you're camping?
You know, that's between me and Zion Canyon and Bryce National Canyon.
Oh, that's right, because you taught us you have to...
I was a responsible pooper in the woods.
Oh, man.
Yes, I wasn't imagining I would talk about this, but yes, I dug a hole and I took care of things in a responsible manner
and packed out
what I was supposed to pack out.
That's great.
And
left what I was supposed to leave.
Thank you.
Did you see any animals?
I saw a rattlesnake up close and personal for the first time. far more up close and personal. Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, Chris, as far away as I am from you, is like 8 feet maybe from this rattlesnake. And I mean, it saw me before I saw it, shook its little rattle, and I, you know, stopped in my tracks and backed up. And
is that what you're supposed to do?
You bang two sticks together?
That was
the
one pile of poop you left.
Go, rattlesnake.
Get out of here, you shoo. Yeah. No, you give them their space, basically. Yeah. So we gave the snake his space and we let him crawl off the trail and then we continued on our way.
Did you feel weird for the rest of the trip after that? Knowing that there were rattlesnakes.
You know, honestly, for the first day, I did. For the first day, and then you kind of just get back nature and you remind yourself that it's actually extremely rare to run across them. They don't want to tangle with you.
Well, now that we're all back, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz! Hotshot! And here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card from our Mega Box, and this is from Genus 4, and it is dated.
Okay.
I mean, this is an old card.
Okay.
I'm just scanning through these questions. I'm not sure if they're still true.
All right.
Great.
But best of luck. You guys have your barnyard buzzers, and let's buzz in for the first question. Blue Wedge for People and Places. What Asian nation is the world's largest importer of oil? Chris.
Siam.
Yeah. Cafe.
I don't know. How old is it? Yes.
Cafe.
Persia.
Largest importer of oil? China.
Incorrect. According to this card.
How about this? Huh. How about Japan?
It is Japan.
Yeah.
They got lots of money,
not a lot of oil.
No. They're resource poor. Yeah.
They got it, you know?
They got a lot
because
of fish.
You got to make those video games out of something.
Fish, as I understand it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From what I've read.
Yeah.
Pink Wedge for Arts and Entertainment. What Irish New Age artist was born?
I think we probably know the answer already. Enya.
Do you know how to pronounce it?
It's Enya, but it's spelled E-I-T-H-N-E, right?
Yes.
Enya Brennan? Yeah. But her name in Gaelic is pronounced Enya, but it's spelled F.
Oh my god! If I were to just pronounce it the way it's spelled, Ithne.
Yeah, right.
Ithne knee. Brionine.
Right, which is Brennan. Gaelic. It has real simple pronunciations, and then they add like five extra letters that don't need to be there.
All right, yellow wedge for history. Oh, man. Oh, this card with all the pronunciations.
So actually, wait, this is hilarious. They actually printed that on a Trivial Pursuit card. So people have to read their name in Gaelic.
Maybe they didn't know that how it was really pronounced in Gaelic. Because it's a bad question.
Actually, it is a really bad question.
Yeah, you're right. If you don't happen to have an Enya fan at the table with you.
Right. No, wait. What Irish New Age pop star? Yeah, true, right. If you know how to pronounce Gaelic, yeah, that's true.
All right, okay, more pronunciation fun. What Vietnamese president was named Nguyen Sinh Cong and Nguyen Ai Quoc before settling on a name that meant, quote, he who enlightens? Colin.
Ho Chi Minh?
Correct.
Yeah.
I think you could have stopped, yeah. It's just like the, what Irish New Age artist? What Vietnamese president?
Yeah, that's the only.
Yeah, you gotta just stop there.
I didn't know that was an adopted name. He who what? What was it?
He who enlightens.
Okay. Yeah, if you're gonna take on a good name, yeah.
Yes.
Brownish but purplish because of sun damage wedge. Okay. For science and nature. What point and click PC software system had sold 60 million copies by 1994 in the 19 years? Oh. Chris.
Windows.
It is Windows.
Yeah. All right.
I could have stopped at what point and click PC software system.
Yeah.
These questions. All right. Green wedge for sports and leisure. What Major League Baseball team did the Walt Disney Company assume operational control of in 1996? Control of in 1996. Everybody.
The Angels.
Yes. What is the place... The blank Angels.
Anaheim?
Oh, but see, LA? At the time they bought it, it's so contentious. Like now,
this is a good trivia question.
Yeah. When they bought them, I'm going to say they were the Los Angeles Angels, and they changed it to Anaheim Angels when they bought them.
Were there other names?
They've been the LA Angels. They've been the Anaheim Angels. I believe now they're the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It's something really tortured right now.
Yeah.
On the card is the California Angels.
So that must be before LA. And I completely forgot one of their names.
Geez.
Angel, what was the movie? Angels in the Outfield. Yeah.
Which was a Disney movie, I believe, right?
They filmed it at the Oakland Coliseum.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Not at the Angel Stadium?
I was in the stadium for one of the scenes.
You were an extra?
Yeah, I was an extra in that movie.
How do we not know this?
I know. Yeah. This was a really good piece of trivia. We should have known.
I mean, you can't see me. There were thousands of people.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Yeah, write it on my IMDb page.
For credit.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, last question. Wild card, orange wedge. What's the official color of IBM?
Oh.
Everybody?
Blue.
Correct.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, good job, brains. Listener, Sherelle Williams, maybe related to Pharrell Williams, probably not.
Probably not.
Sherelle Williams wrote in, very enthusiastic, and she is all about slangs, and so she has this message for us.
Hey, bae, where you headed to? So listen, did you see my girl yesterday at the concert? Didn't she slay? What? I'm only 34 years old, but I get lost sometimes with all of the slang used. I'm hip to some of the meanings, although I tend not to use them. But some of them, I'm like, where and who do these words come from? And what exactly do they mean? I find it interesting to hear that the word swag can be traced all the way back to William Shakespeare, who apparently invented the word swag. Do you have any interesting slang that has you clueless that you like to share?
So today's episode is about slang, not just now, but the history of slang.
That's right. So grab your bae, because this episode is going to be on fleek.
As you guys know, I've talked in the past how I love the corrections section in the New York Times.
Oh, who doesn't?
It's so nerdy, but it fills me with such glee imagining the person having to type out the correction, the person who sent in the letter. Partly because, you know, the New York Times is just, I mean, we all know the image of the New York Times is just kind of just staid and you're like, this is just the rock of American journalism. Yeah. So I've got something that's related to that delight I get from the corrections. And this was inspired by an article that appeared in The Atlantic magazine last year. This was by co-authored by Megan Garber, Adrian LaFrance, and Ian Bogost.
Who, another guy.
I believe you do know. He's a teacher, writer, video game designer.
Professor at Georgia Tech. And he made, writes a lot about video games. Right? Makes a lot of video games. Yeah.
Yeah.
He made Cow Clicker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So this article was called The...
You're not supposed to like it.
This article was called The Evolution of Slang, and it was inspired by them reading an article in the New York Times about implementing a $25 penalty for pot possession in D.C., okay? And so in the article, they quoted a person saying, a ticket when you just have a J or something, using a slang term for a marijuana cigarette. And this is the humor the New York Times feel compelled to explain, and not just to explain, but they say a marijuana cigarette.
It's like, Dad, get out of my room.
So what they did is they went through the New York Times archives and pulled out every instance of in the New York Times, going all the way back to the 1800s, of them clarifying, this is a slang term for X.
Wow.
So I pulled out a few of the examples here.
When was the first one?
The earliest one that they had in their article was 1855.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Yeah, okay. 1855. Most of these words we still use as slang. Some of them we don't. So, like, here's one just very simple example from 1910, talking about chump, and it has to clarify in the article, a chump is slang for a sucker.
What is sucker slang? Is the question,
Some of the terms have dropped away, though. This is from 1926, okay, when you could use the word vaudevilled to mean cut. All right, so this is an article. I had just had my tonsils vaudevilled.
What?
Yes, no. yes. And the New York Times has to clarify for the reader that this is vaudevilled is slang for cut.
I vaudevilled my finger.
It's like you dressed it up in a little hat and made a dancer.
Yeah, because you think of vaudeville as the actual show.
Yeah.
You know, variety show in a theater. I understand like some acts, like vaudeville acts get cut in interest of time.
Yeah.
But that's not the first thing I think of.
From 1981. 1981, okay? She told Mr. Klein that she drank and smoked and said, every now and then I smoke a little weed. A slang term for marijuana.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
It has to come from somewhere.
It has to come from somewhere. Yeah. And I guess even as late as 1981, like, some readers of the New York Times.
I did not know you could smoke dandelions.
Right. Dandelions.
From 1994. What you basically have here is an officer who felt dissed because a football hit his car, she concluded, using a slang term for a perceived act of disrespect.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Nice when they can work in the English word that the slang was derived from.
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes you feel like you're learning something.
Disrespected.
Right, yeah.
Karen,
don't tell me.
Karen! Oh, Karen!
No!
You know what? She didn't live in the U.S. in the 80s.
Yes.
Okay, like, all 80s, right. 90s. She wasn't reading the New York Times in 1981. Right.
You know, when you're disrespected.
You guys all knew this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was like dislike. Like, no. I don't know.
Oh.
Disrespected.
Okay.
The reason why this was really funny was because it was like, this is like weird slang from when we were kids. Like, yeah.
Also, that's like a contraction of.
Yeah.
And they had to explain that.
They had to explain what dist means, right? I don't know why marijuana keeps popping up. There's an interview
because
there's a lot of slang.
Yeah.
They're interviewing one of the members of the Doobie Brothers. And he's all, at 18, Mr. Hartman was the drummer for the band, which took the Doobie in its name from a slang word for a marijuana cigarette.
We're back to the marijuana cigarette.
I feel like between the lines in some of these, there's a little bit of side eye from the writers. Yeah. This is from an article in 2010 about Hooters. Okay, the chain of...
All right, buckle up.
Yes.
Chain of restaurants that serves wings with lady waitresses.
Who wear shorts.
Who wear short shorts.
Yeah.
The chain acknowledges that many consider Hooters a slang term for a portion of the female anatomy.
Which portion?
Yeah.
That's not... What? You don't say.
Yeah, like... we don't intend that, but we acknowledge that some of our patrons
but why
do.
Wait, is that... But why does New York Times have to, like, a part of a woman's body? Okay, what part? The elbow?
Yeah, exactly.
If we're going to go there,
let's just say what it is.
We can't say boobs in the pages of the New York Times.
No, it's a respectable newspaper.
Yeah, be like melons, but that's slang for melons.
But I think Hooters was trying to reinvent itself as like a family restaurant.
They were.
And so maybe that's why they're like, no, it's owls. We really like owls. Like,
what? They do have owls on their signage.
Yeah.
And then some of them go a little further beyond than maybe you thought was necessary. This is talking about dork from 2001. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The juvenile insult dork is from a slang term for the penis, mm-hmm. as are mm-hmm. the Yiddish-derived terms
wait.
Schmuck and putz.
Now we're just listing more.
Yeah.
More penis words.
They're like, well, now that you've given me the opportunity.
Here I go.
I'm so glad you asked. Yes.
My favorite one, though, just to close out here, my favorite one is both a New York Times correction and a New York Times slang update.
Oh, so they had to correct their own slang?
Yes. Okay. This is from 2009. The Big City column on Saturday about Sandra Fleming, a social worker who visits her clients by motorcycle, misstated a slang term for a high-performance sport motorcycle. It is crotch rocket, mm-hmm. not crash rocket.
Both work.
Yes, yep. They both. And you can see it's almost like an egg corn.
Sure. Yeah.
So thank you to The Atlantic and The New York Times for keeping us enlightened as a nation on dissing props and crotch rockets and marijuana cigarettes.
A lot of names for that.
Yeah.
So in a similar vein to The New York Times, academics have been chronicling slang for hundreds of years and explaining it, maybe passing judgment on it.
So, maybe.
That's our job.
I mean, actually, yes, 100% passing judgment on it. I found the Dictionary of the English Language written in 1755 by Samuel Johnson. And this was a very important dictionary. It wasn't the first dictionary. It wasn't the dictionary with the most number of words. But it was the first dictionary where it recorded a faithful record of the language people used at that time.
Ah, sure.
And nice. that was the first time anyone had really done that.
Nobody was going in making value judgments on like, well, you shouldn't say this word, so it's not in the dictionary.
They were mostly just like kind of collections of the hardest words, like the most obscure words. Oh, and he was like,
interesting.
And he was a little bit editorial. Like he wouldn't include some words that he didn't think were worth keeping.
Right.
And some words he was very quick to dismiss. He also cited the sources he got them from.
Oh,
so he was like, oh, this was in Shakespeare. This was in a different poet.
I didn't make it up.
He was very quick to pass judgment. And it's funny. It's on Google Books if you want to read it. It feels like a literature book almost. This hilarious old dude you can talk to. And he's very snarky about everything. He didn't call anything slang. He called it cant. And to him, cant, C-A-N-T, let me get the exact quote because this is the tone that he strikes with this stuff. A cant is a corrupt dialect used by beggars and vagabonds.
Awesome.
He'd say stuff like, oh yeah, that's the cant of children. That's a cant of women.
I see.
These subgroups who don't have the full proper English. Yeah.
Would you say this to one of your social betters? No. And he sounds like he would be very fancy in real life and maybe like very pretentious, but he doesn't sound like he was. He actually hung out with people who used these words. He just didn't feel like they were worthy of recording in the dictionary or worthy of praise. What's funny is since 1755, some of these words that he said were cant or very low words are words that we totally use. No one would think that they are slang at all. He was wrong about whether or not they would last the test of time.
That's true. Because slang is not just jargon or lingo. Slang is like informalizing a word. It's not just a substitute. It is like a more casual substitute.
So I have kind of a short quiz for you guys. The dictionary, by the way, is hilarious. Lots of good reading. I'm going to have to finish looking through it later, but I did pull out some words from it. It's a mix of words that are cant and words that are not cant.
All
and
right.
I'm curious what you guys think. You think in 1755 this was what the street people were saying? Or
all right.
Okay. First word, a fib.
A fib. Oh.
A fib. I don't even know what that means.
A lie.
A little lie.
It's not one giant word, a fib.
I'll say cant.
I'll say cant.
not can't.
It's can't. It's a can't word for children. That's what he said. He wrote that in his dictionary. Can't
Which it almost still is.
Yeah, it is. It is.
What kid used? What kid says fib?
Oh, like in the. But it's still,
it's more like when you're an adult, it's like, oh, you're a liar, you're lying.
Yeah. Right.
But for kids, it's like, oh, I just fibbed, you know? I'm just fibbing. I'm just, you know, I'm going around fibbing. Fibbing.
Fibbage.
You know how it is.
What about the word fun?
Fun.
Fun. No. I'm trying to think of, like, what would a more proper variant of that be? I'm going to say not can't. I'm going to say fun is fun.
I'm going to say can't. I'm going to say can't. I'm going to say can't.
It's a can't. He said it was a can't.
Son of a gun.
That was not a thing that people talked about. It was a low word.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what would they say? Enjoyment?
They did not have fun. It was a hard life. I don't know what they said.
I mean,
enjoyment,
didn't have
games
fun.
Of merriment and
merriment.
Leisure. Yes, merriment.
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 Leisure. Yeah.
Yep.
Flirtation.
I'll say not can't.
I'll say can't just to mix it up.
It's a can't word among women.
What?
Among women. Okay.
Yeah, he's
but still
super
with
super snarky. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Whatever. Yeah.
So does that mean only women say it to women?
Right. You're getting at is the distinction the word itself or the activity that
exactly. Yeah, cultural.
I think that they're tied up.
Only women will gossip about.
They're not totally separate.
He's recorded it and now he's the voice of record for this time, so this is like,
yeah.
What about a job? J-O-B. Like work.
Okay,
job.
All right. Can't, because, you know, it would otherwise be occupation.
I'm going to say not can't, and I'm going to, in my own head, justify it that I think some of these definitions may have slightly changed over time, too.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to say can't. I'm going to say not can't,
okay.
But that maybe it meant something different.
Can't.
I'm going with can't.
It is not can't,
but
it is low. Okay. It describes low work,
okay.
But it is not can't.
Oh, got it.
What about laudanum?
Oh.
Laudanum? Nice. Like the chemical?
Like opium?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Not can't.
Hmm.
That sounds so scientific-y.
It does sound scientific-y.
Also, it's so not short.
I'll say not can't for the same
laudanum.
Reason.
Like, yeah. I'll say can't just to be contrarian.
He wrote, it's a can't word.
Yeah, that's a long, complicated can't.
Well, it's not
they
like,
use, like
so
Latin for
it's just
fun.
Like vulgar, used by base people. It's not a proper word, not a polite society kind of term. Mm-hmm.
But again, how much of that is because it's people using it recreationally and he doesn't
approve,
Tiny.
Oh, geez.
Oh, tiny.
I'll say can't because it's
not
an
can't.
Adjective.
I feel like this is Shakespeare.
Can't.
Is can't.
Ugh.
And he said it was an Irish word. He's also like a weird, a little bit racist.
A little bit. Yeah.
I mean, he's of the time, whatever. How about gibber?
Oh, can't.
Gibber?
Mm-hmm.
Not can't.
I'll say not can't.
Oh my God, it sounds so slangy.
I know.
Yeah,
it came from Shakespeare, and so he said it wasn't can't. But gibberish is can't.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what does gibber mean?
To speak inarticulately.
To produce our gibberish.
Just like,
just like that? Yeah.
Yeah, just like inarticulately. How about magazine?
Get out. Magazine.
Magazine.
I mean...
Do you guys ever think it's weird that in French a store is called magasin?
I do think it's weird.
Man, I know that when magazines came out, it was a pretty bourgeois thing. I'm going to say not can't.
Not can't.
Can't.
It is not can't.
Right.
It's a miscellaneous pamphlet.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
His definitions are very highfalutin.
I feel like in 1755, anything that was printed is going to...
True.
He wrote for a magazine, so he was okay with it.
Of course.
Yeah. How about to volunteer, as in to volunteer for the army?
Whoa.
Volunteer. Like racketeer, steer, volunteer. I'll say not can't.
Not can't.
Not can't. The tier seems so formal.
What about mousketeer?
So this is where there's voluntary was fine. A volunteer is fine.
Uh-huh.
But to volunteer is can't.
Oh, okay. Because it's not.
Because it was like short for like you're volunteering for the army, so you went to volunteer.
My finger got vaudevilled.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. My finger got volunteered for the army.
Yeah,
can't.
So it's like, oh god.
That follows a pattern, I think, with a lot of devices.
Slang,
right?
Yeah, where it becomes a
noun as verb.
Not to call someone on the telephone,
right?
But to
phone them.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when was that dictionary written? 1755.
It took him 9 years.
Cow.
He wrote it by himself.
Well, he didn't have any form.
They said it,
I know,
they
that's
said
how you
it
write
was
a dictionary.
Like one of the most impressive works of
It's a big deal, yeah.
Of art or literature.
I mean, and it was a big inspiration on like Noah Webster and stuff too, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. For everybody. Yeah. It was the definitive dictionary until the OED came.
What were the dictionaries
before? And it's full of weird, snarky stories about things that people do or say.
They would just have like spelling lists and things like that before. They didn't really have dictionaries.
They wouldn't really guess where the words came from. They would only put really hard words. They wouldn't put any common words that people use.
Oh, I see.
So he was commissioned to write something that people felt like would capture words that people use. Mm-hmm. And
that the word migrating is weird because like I think it was just recently I realized there are so many slang words or words I use that are a result of typos.
Huh.
Like
what?
Like I always say Z-O-M-G. Like, I always type out Zong. And I'm like, Zong! And then why am I typing this? It's people because type this all the time because it's result of a typo and people just start catching on.
Yep.
Because Z is close to shift, the shift key. And then, like, people who say, this is Tay Suck, which is
which is a typo.
Yeah.
Or own. Is P-W-N is also a typo. And I was like, why are there so many typo slangs that I just like don't realize that I'm using?
That's a good example. Yeah. I think
it's so weird. It's so weird that now that's a new way of slangs to be introduced is through typing.
Typos.
This whole like nationwide panic about why are we using bae? What does it mean? Why can't we just say babe or baby? Bae, B-A-E.
Right.
Is like your significant other, your baby, something you think is cool.
I thought it was about Beyonce for a long time.
B-E-Y.
Yeah. I was like, oh, everyone loves Bay. Like, okay.
Beyonce.
Yeah, Bay. I thought they were being very casual with her name. Anyway.
And, well, so became popular because it was in a Pharrell Williams song. Come and get it, Bay. B-A-E. But it got me thinking. I was like, this may be one of these typo slangs. I think it might be like you know how.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah.
People just take out letters from
because there's just too much going on with the lips and the teeth. We just gotta so it goes from baby to babe to bay to eventually we'll just all be calling each other.
I don't know. I think it'd be cool if it were a text typo origin.
It would be.
Yeah. That would be cool.
But we don't know. I mean, well, some people have backronyms beyond anything else. So this person is of importance beyond anything else.
No.
Regina, my wife, just had this experience for the first time in Japan, and that I had always known that this happens, but she came up to me and she was telling me about this story. I'm like, yeah. So you know that there's a phrase that Japanese like store clerks say when somebody comes into the store, right? Like somebody comes.
Itadakimasu
is when you're about to eat.
Itadakimasu.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it's you know it's sort of like untranslatable.
Can you say properly?
Absolutely. Itadakimasu.
Okay.
So that's. Yeah.
It's like five syllables.
Okay.
Yeah. More because Japanese, but yes. Okay. You had a small store, you know, every time somebody would come in, you would say it just to them. But in the way that they work it for like the big department stores in Japan is that like the store clerks are just saying irashaimase constantly throughout their 8-hour shift. Because people are coming in and out.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily saying it to you. They're just saying it.
Yeah.
It's like it's important
a blanket
to express.
Statement.
It's a blanket, you know, shall I say. Now, imagine having to say the same word for 8 hours a day for your whole life. It's just going to become very automatic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what you're probably going to do is you're probably going to start eliding some of the syllables. You're probably not going to start pronouncing some things. And like a lot of people do is you won't really start to say the beginning of the word. Like as you start thinking it before your mouth starts making the sound and then you only vocalize the end of it. You know, the way that we might be like, hey, how's it going? You know?
Yeah,
Sup, it's going.
Sup.
Exactly. So sometimes it's like, shimase, you know, and you don't really hear the beginning of it. And then some people are just sort of like, Masay. And then you really get people who, by the end of their tenure of working at these stores, they're literally just standing in the store all day going, eh. And Mrs. Regina was just like, I didn't know what was going on. And then I realized he was saying irashaimase, but he was only saying
Poor guy.
Poor guy. There was a guy way back in the day when we lived there. There was one certain store that we would go to with one certain clerk who had a really nasally voice. His voice was very, very high and nasally, oh. And he just did the A, like he just did the last syllable of the word. So you'd be shopping, and he worked on the video game floor, so we'd be up there for like, oh, you know, half an hour, like looking through video games. Every minute, you would just hear, you would hear this. This is the closest approximation I can do.
That's like a moose meat.
Yeah. It's like it's like when you had the little farm, when you had the little farm set in the barn when you were a kid, and you like open the door and a spring would go off, and it was supposed to represent that. Yep. I can still hear it clear as day in my head.
Babe is too hard to say.
Baby is too hard to say.
Yo, babe.
Oh. I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I don't pretend to know where that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here is some slang from maybe one of my favorite eras and maybe one of your favorite eras, the 60s. That's right, slang of the 60s. Nice. A quiz about slang words from the 60s. The trick is that I'm going to give you some 60s slang, and you have to tell me if it is from the 1960s or the 1860s.
Oh. Okay.
Which 60s will it be?
Wow, that's smart.
All right. All right, okay, we'll see. Actually, can anybody guess why I was able to find a list of slang from the 1860s?
There's the book.
There's a book of it. Civil War reenactment websites have a lot of the. Yeah, they go deep.
Because they want to be in character. Yeah.
They want to be in characters and to qualify and to prevent any actuallys. This is what I'm asking for. Did this word appear on a list of 1960s slang that I found on PBS.org? Yeah. Or did it appear on a list of 1860s slang that I found in a military history site?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
What this means is this a slang word that, you know, would have only really come into common use around the 1960s and thus, you know, the Civil War came before this word.
Right.
Yeah.
Or is this something that people would have used in the 1860s
as well?
So here we go. I will give you the word.
Interesting.
I will throw the definition out there so you have something to work with, so you know what word I'm talking about. You don't have to buzz in or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just tell me 1860s or 1960s.
Okay.
And we'll see who's right and who's wrong. How about that? Sounds good.
Sounds good.
The clink. The clink, meaning jail. Okay, thrown in the clink.
Oh, the clink.
Is this student protesters from the 1960s, or is it Civil War?
I'll say 1860s.
Sequel from the 1860s.
I will say 19.
18.
1819, 19. It's 1860s. The clink would have been used during the Civil War. Yep.
Sounds like a disease, like a...
Yeah.
like the chains clinking together.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining,
yeah. Right.
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like manacles
or something.
Or the clink of the door as it shuts. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
To book it, as in to move very quickly. Mm. We booked it out of there. We got a book.
19.
Is this 1860s Civil War slang, or is this 1960s?
Book it.
To book it. Yeah, book, 60s. As in to move quickly.
Or 1960s.
Well, 19. Yeah.
19.
Yeah. I'll say 19 as well.
19. It is 1960s slang. We booked it out of there.
Booking.
Cool. Yep. Chin music, not getting kicked in the chin by Shawn Michaels, but chin music as in conversation. Conversation, the phrase chin music to mean conversation.
That's got
the sounds of chatter.
18.
Is that 19? It's
got
to be 18.
Everybody thinks it's 18.
Yeah.
Everybody is right. Yes.
Yeah,
1960 slang.
A lot of facial hair back
feels
then.
Feels like rustic and sarcastic.
That's also a baseball slang.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like if you get like a pitch awfully close to your head or something, right. It's like, oh, I got a little chin music.
Chin music,
there.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Goober peas. Goober peas, meaning peanuts, yes.
Oh.
Goober peas.
I know the candy goobers, it's the chocolate covered.
The question is it super recent or?
18.
You're right, it's the 1860s. Yeah, cool. Yeah, it would have been in use in the 1860s. And again, some of these may even predate the 1860s by a lot, but I mean, these are...
Goober peas,
meaning peanuts.
Booger geese.
It does sound...
gut wadding. Gut wadding. That is sheep food that fills you up. Gut wadding. Wow. It's got to be deep. It's got to be filling.
I'm inclined to agree. It sounds very
18. So get some gut wadding.
In the trenches.
Some hardened, tired people.
Yeah. Yeah, you get like some like...
Are we up there in
agreement? With your chin music.
Salt pork or fat back or something. Yeah.
It's all body part and something else. Chin music and gut wads.
So 1860s for everybody. You're all wrong. It's 1960s slang for going down to McDonald's and getting some like the cheap fast food.
Wow.
Yep. Gut wadding. Right. Yep. Hunky dory.
Wow.
Hunky dory. We hear this a lot today. Hunky dory just meaning okay, I'm all right, I'm doing good. I'm hunky dory. Is that a 1960s or 1860s?
This is 1960s, like surf terms.
It's possible it was in the 1860s too, but definitely in the 1960s.
I think you're tricking us. I'm going to say 1860s.
Yeah. I feel like this is an old term. I'm going to say 1860s.
Hunky dory. They used it in the Civil War. I'm trying to imagine like those Civil War dudes.
Right. When everything was not hunky dory.
Yeah, nothing was very hunky dory.
Misshapen bullets were flying by their heads.
It was like the opposite of hunky dory.
Right.
I'll go 19. I'll be different.
You'll go 19. It is 1860s. Yeah. It is an 1860s phrase.
Means the same. Like,
oh, it means the same thing. Yep.
Gravy.
Hunky-dory. It's an old phrase. Yeah.
I feel like that kind of word construction of the hyphenated and, I don't know. It just
mamby-pamby.
Sure.
Yeah, there you go. Like mamby-pamby. Okay. Right.
Bogart, as in to hog something, to take all, don't Bogart the marijuana cigarette.
It would be, totally.
It's often said.
It has to be 1960, right?
Yes, is that 1860
Isn't
or 1960?
Isn't this a Harry
Bogart
Potter
something?
Thing?
No, that's a Bogart.
Yeah, but like Humphrey Bogart. Yeah.
Right. Wait, but did it come from that or not? Who knows?
Was it fake? Oh.
I don't know. I'm gonna say it was 19? Fake. I'm just saying
19.
Who knows where it comes from?
I say 19.
If it's 19, not 19,
Dana says 19.
My head will fall off. I'm Colin very
says,
shocked.
Dana says 19 with a bet.
What does it mean again?
To hog something, to take all the something. Don't Bogart the broccoli.
18.
Yeah?
What is it?
1960s.
Okay.
All right.
Man, I'm
1960s
the worst.
Slang. Like a Humphrey Bogart.
Finally, bark juice. Bark juice, meaning alcohol. Bark juice.
Bark juice. Bark.
18.
Yeah?
19, I would say.
It just, yeah. I'm going to go with Karen. I agree with Karen.
I feel like 1960, they would have cooler words, booze.
It could be like some beatnik. No, you know what? I've switched. I'm going 1960s. I'm going to say
19?
Yeah, I say 19.
For bark juice?
For bark juice. 19.
All right. Dana says 19. Colin says 19. Karen says
18.
It is an 1860s term for alcohol. Yes, and since this is good job, Brian, I left out about 5 or 6 different words and phrases meaning prostitute.
I have very quickly here looked up the OED origins of Bogart.
Yes.
Yeah.
1969.
Wow.
To keep a joint in your mouth. Dangling from the lip like Humphrey Bogart's cigarette in the old movies instead of passing it on.
Cigarette related.
First attested in Easy Rider.
Okay. There we go.
Okay, so.
And that's why it's Bogart. Like, why you have it. Yeah, it's dangling
you
from your mouth.
You look like Humphrey Bogart right now.
Oh my God, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Joint is slang for a marijuana cigarette, by the way. Just to be clear.
I know. No notes. No.
Wow. Well, obviously, living in America, I might know these slangs, but I don't know the origin. Like this, that was very eye opening to me. But I want to talk about something that is of an American invention, originally called Fruit Smack.
What?
Oh yeah.
Do you know what Fruit Smack?
Yeah. Wasn't that Kool-Aid or something?
It became Kool-Aid.
Oh,
okay. Fruit Smack, originally invented by Edwin Perkins, which is the Kool-Aid inventor. This is the proto Kool-Aid.
Okay.
So before Kool-Aid, which is a powdered consistency, Fruit Smack was a liquid consistency. So it's a
concentrated
for your fruity beverage.
Mm-hmm.
And still, it was too heavy. So what he did was evaporated all of the liquid and then it
got rid of all the liquid. Yeah.
Oh, it's like Hawaiian Punch. So Fruit Smack Hawaiian Punch.
Oh, nice.
Oh, like, whoa. Smack your mouth. Punch your mouth.
Right. Or like Beef Kick.
Wait, that's
sure. That powdered beef beverage.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's more of a bouillon.
Didn't sell very well. Didn't sell very well, yeah.
Yeah, it became bouillon.
Yeah.
After they
rebranded it. They're like, oh.
Beef kick.
Yeah.
Now, are you saying that the cow's going to kick me? Because that doesn't
sound... That's the logo.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
What does the Hawaiian Punch kid punch some?
He just... Yeah. Oh, yeah. He just goes around punching people.
So it would be a cow kicking people.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Naturally.
I have some cool facts
about... Let's run with this. Oh, no,
some
okay.
I have some cool facts about Kool-Aid, but, like, you know, one of the things is the Kool-Aid mascot, which is the Kool-Aid Man, who's a giant pitcher.
Pitcher of Kool-Aid.
Of Kool-Aid, so who was originally called the Pitcher Man.
That's really scary.
I hope that was a joke on Pitch Man. Maybe. Oh, maybe.
No,
maybe.
I think, no, they're just like, let's put legs and arms and face on a vessel where you drink this, and it just became Kool-Aid.
You're sure it's not Pitcher Man?
But,
Phil Pitcherman?
They changed it at Ellis Island.
Right.
Isaac Pitcherman.
Right, from Pitchovsky.
Can you imagine the Kool-Aid Man taking the little boat to Ellis Island? Right. He's just so big. Kool-Aid Man has gone through a lot, because he was invented really early on. There used to be a man in a pitcher, in a Kool-Aid pitcher outfit.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Like in the commercials. He used to be live action.
Yeah. Jeez. He's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And after 1994, it was either computer or it was animated.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But the children are still real children in the commercial.
I have not seen a Kool-Aid commercial in forever.
The Kool-Aid Man did go through like a cool 80s and 90s resurgence. Uh-huh. They put a little jacket on him.
He would like...
Oh yeah, the leather jacket.
And it Converse sneakers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It didn't read as cool to me. Yes.
They were going to have him with Reebok pumps, but then he bent over to pump the shoes up.
Who's looking at his shoes?
You say that, but there was a Reebok Kool-Aid collaboration where they made Reebok shoes based on Kool-Aid flavors, and his face is on the side of the shoe.
What?
Wow.
And you
lick the shoe?
No.
And it tastes... Oh, I don't
this
know.
This is what a room of marketing people thinks children want.
Well, I'm not done with possible.
Okay,
I'm not done. Right. Do you remember a specific flavor called Sharkleberry Finn?
Yes, I do.
There's a place... Yeah, I don't remember where my keys are, but there's a place in my brain for remembering that Sharkleberry Finn exists.
And Sharkleberry Finn is the Kool-Aid Man riding a pink shark with sunglasses. Of course, it's so nice.
Well, how else would you know it's cool?
It's a very hard-to-find flavor, according to the Kool-Aid collectible and enthusiast circle.
Is it produced still?
No.
Okay.
You can buy the single packets, and it's the first Kool-Aid flavor to ever have banana.
Hmm.
Huh.
Okay.
It's a banana, I believe it.
It's tropical.
So you mean, so you can, like, you have to go buy old Kool-Aid packets.
Are they going to bring it back? I think I read something.
Sharkleberry Finn.
Yeah, because people are demanding. Like,
Demanding.
Yeah. I want banana-flavored Kool-Aid.
Anyways, all this Kool-Aid talk.
This is leading to something.
Okay.
Being in the tech industry in San Francisco, I hear the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid. And I looked up where it came from, the origin.
Not a happy story.
It is not a happy story.
Right.
No.
You guys all know this.
Yes.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Jim Jones.
Yeah. And there are two very distinct meanings, but they all stem from the same origin in terms of drinking the Kool-Aid. It's used in the political sense, meaning imminent loss. We're going to lose this election, or we're going to lose something. So there is a political meaning saying, time to break out the Kool-Aid, let's drink the Kool-Aid. Like, we're on our way to lose. Yeah. And then we're probably more familiar with the, man, that guy's really drinking his Kool-Aid. Like, he's really into himself. He's blindly buying into this
indoctrinated
idea or this product. And you can see why there is such a big business tilt to it, because it is this new product. Yeah, it's awesome. And they're drinking the Kool-Aid. So it's kind of two different meanings, but they all stem from the Jonestown Massacre, which I had no idea where is drinking the Kool-Aid comes from. You know, a very, very quick history lesson. Jonestown Massacre, very, very sad. This happened in the 70s. Basically, it was an American cult community that uprooted themselves from America to Guyana, which is South America, and 900 people died from a mass suicide, and they're told that this is by Jim Jones, the cult leader, that this is the way it has to be. And they drank cyanide and Valium and mixed in with not Kool-Aid, Flavor Aid. The brand name that they drink, this instant powder drink,
was Flavor Aid.
Poor Kool-Aid. There might have been Kool-Aid in the compound.
This is why you protect your copyrights and your trademarks.
Because
you don't want it to become a generic term. For this reason.
Yeah. I have never even heard of the brand Flavor Aid, but it is a Kool-Aid knockoff from America.
That is a morbidly interesting trivia bit, though. You're right.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
It was an unfortunate thing for Kool-Aid, but also an unfortunate event for America, because the Jonestown Massacre is, before 9/11, the biggest recorded amount of civilian death.
In one event.
And you can see how that origin or that story, that piece of history, came up with drinking the Kool-Aid.
It's black humor. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's imminent loss.
I believe they had done trials of this as well. I think I had read that they had done it with non-poison Flavor Aid. So it wasn't like this was a surprise to them, like that they knew what was going on.
Yeah. The power of Jim Jones and his charisma and, you know, just his personality. And this is where the business side of the Kool-Aid, drinking the Kool-Aid, comes from, is that you accept, you believe,
you
buy in on this. Like me, if you say that a lot and you don't know where drinking the Kool-Aid comes from, I'm not saying you can't say it, but now you know where it comes from for listeners who don't know. And also that it was Flavor Aid, it was not Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And sad.
So there you go. A little bit dark, but now you know. And we got one last segment. Hip segment.
Oh, I didn't promise hip. Oh, yeah. I didn't say it was going to be
hip. Do you know hip came from hep?
I did know that. Good night, everybody.
Oh, but did you know that the word hip-hop is in that Samuel Johnson dictionary?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Meaning what?
It's just like, oh, it's cant for, I didn't ask you because it's obvious it's cant, but it's like, oh, they're just silly like words jumping. That go with hop.
Right.
Yeah, the reduplication of, hip-hop.
I can see why they made the change, because now if you say hep, I think of hepatitis. Right?
Hep cat, like a sick cat.
Yeah, like
a cat. Yes, I have a possibly hep quiz for you guys. It's been a while since I've inflicted some sports trivia on you guys, so I will... I promise to try and go easy here. I have sports slang quiz. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a word or phrase that is hopefully very common known slang for the sport, and I will give you the sport and you tell me what it means.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
These are pretty colorful. I like it. Some of these are very weird,
and where possible, I will try and give you a little bit of etymology. It will not surprise you to learn that a lot of these sports slang terms have disputed origins.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. First one. So get your buzzers ready. Buzz in if you think you know it. And remember, I'm giving you two pieces of information, slang and sport. You tell me what it means.
Okay.
In bowling, what is a turkey? I think everyone clicked in on that one.
Three strikes
in a row.
It is. Yeah. Three strikes in a row. Three.
Did you guys see my tweet?
I didn't.
Did you guys see my Good Job Brain tweet? I found out all the different names consecutive strikes.
The double turkey.
Yes, there's many different ones.
Yeah.
Yes, the four bagger, the five. Yes, there's many, many different names. The turkey is one of the more well-known and easier to accomplish.
Turkey's pretty standardized.
There are, believe me, I tried. I could not find any citations for the actual origin of this, but a very commonly told story is that once upon a time, it was common either for a particular bowling alley or for bowling alleys in general
to award
a turkey during the holiday season to the first person on a team, maybe that day, who could get three consecutive strikes.
That's cool.
Who knows?
Get people in the door.
Yeah, possibly. Sure. Is the best. Yeah, and to be fair, it did used to be a lot harder to hit three strikes in a row than it is.
Yeah,
the
right.
The bowling alley was all...
Yeah.
And the balls were oblong.
The pins were set by hand. They weren't going to be...
They were pelicans, right?
Right.
Right.
Okay. In football, American style football. What is a Hail Mary? Chris.
That is when you basically, when you're like, you know, 80 yards, you know, to the goal and there's 10 seconds left on the clock and you don't have any timeouts and it's just like, okay, run super fast towards the goal and I'll just lob the ball towards you and there's a 1 out of 100 chance you're going to catch it, but whatever.
Exactly
it's
right.
It's basically like, oh, okay. saying a prayer to Mary, Mother of God, and maybe she is rooting for your football team and she will intervene and guide the ball to the hand of the receiver.
That's right. That's right.
So it's just you're really far from the goal, and someone's just going to throw the ball, and someone's just going to run. Yep,
say a little prayer and hope that
you're really far from the goal. You're down so much, time's running out that even if it's intercepted, it doesn't matter because you're going to lose anyway. Like slam dunk or home run. This is one that's kind of moved out. You know, it's we're down to our Hail Mary play.
Right.
This is interesting for the real sports fans among you. You might be interested to learn
who's that.
I found out that this only dates back to 1972, this term, and it's credited to Roger Staubach, who is a famous Dallas Cowboys quarterback. But he is credited with coming up with the word. Yeah, in an interview.
He was our Hail Mary. Oh, yeah.
The interview, the interviewer for Sporting News says, I asked if he really saw the receiver or if he was throwing it away. He said, let's just call it my Hail Mary play.
Yeah. Wow. There we go. Wow, it's always nice when you can pinpoint it right on the dot.
So satisfying.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
In the sport of hockey, what is the five hole? The five hole. And I can give you a hint if you want. Chris,
want to take a... Is it the penalty box?
No. Karen?
What is a five hole?
The five hole.
The five
hole. Or a five hole.
Is it the hole in the middle where you do the kickoff?
The face-off.
The five hole, I'll give you a hint.
There's five areas.
There are five face-off circles, yep. You're right. It's related to the five goalie. Hole. The five hole is related to the goalie position.
Karen. The face.
No, not the face, but you're thinking in the right direction.
The butt.
The five hole.
Yeah, go on.
The five hole is the spot between the legs.
Oh my God. That's what I thought it was without any clues.
The hole, the spots are numbered. No. The spots are, so if you're a goalie in front of the net, you've got glove side high, glove side low, stick side high, stick side low, and those are 1, 2, 3, 4. And then there's the five hole, which is right between the legs.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's a word we need to say.
Five hole is great. Yes. Yeah.
I loved him in an American Tale.
Five hole. In the sport of basketball, what is a brick? What's a brick?
Oh. No.
Yeah. I believe that's when you throw the basketball and it just like bounces off the backboard and just rebounds and does not go into.
I will accept that. Yeah. Notably, it's a bad shot that's not an air ball.
It hits a thing.
A brick has to,
it made contact with something.
That's so poetic. Air ball and brick.
Yeah. And
airball.
Yeah.
And I think the connotation is pretty clear. It's like you're throwing up bricks. They're not very pretty to look at.
Yeah.
The worse a shot is, the more likely it's going to be called a brick. Mm-hmm. All right. We've had this one on Pub Quiz before. This one's shown up in the sport of baseball. In the sport of baseball. What is Uncle Charlie?
Oh.
Karen.
That is a curveball.
Yes. You are correct.
Yes. Okay.
Begins with C as well, not knuckleball. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a C and an R in there. Charlie,
Curve. Who is Uncle Charlie? Is that named after a person?
I think it's taking, I'm spacing on the name of it, but it's Charlie as in military code for C.
This one's a little unclear as to where the Charlie and Uncle Charlie comes from. Some people say military, some people say CB radio code. It's kind of lost to the mists of baseball, but Uncle Charlie is code for the curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Last one, and I'm not going to give you a sport here. What is a hat trick? And what sport might you use it in? Chris and or Karen?
Hockey.
Uh-huh.
And it's when you score three goals. Is it when one player scores three goals in a single game, or is it when one team scores three goals in a row without the other team scoring?
A hat trick is one player scoring three goals in a game.
Okay. It's three.
Right.
Yeah, it
doesn't need to be consecutive. Doesn't need to be unanswered. Yep. Right.
But this slang, but this slang evolves into three of anything, kind of. Almost.
Yes,
it does.
Like,
it
much
does.
Like you know, Hail Mary and Grand Slam and et cetera. It's evolved out of sports into
right.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's a menu item at Denny's.
You hear it. You'll hear it mostly in.
I order the Hail Mary all the time at Denny's personally.
You'll hear it mostly in hockey, also in soccer. You can have a hat trick in soccer, three goals. And there are a lot of stories about where this one originated in hockey leagues.
It's a peggle as well.
NHL teams, going back to like around the mid-century, there are competing stories, but they all sort of revolve around the same theme of a local businessman team sponsor basically offered a reward of a free hat. A nice free hat to any player who could score.
All of these things always sound like things people needed an explanation for, so they made up the most obvious explanation. Like, why is it called a turkey? Because they give you a free turkey. Why is it called a hat trick? Because they give you a free hat.
Yes.
Why is it called Hail Mary? Because they gave it a free Bible day. They gave it a free Bible.
The fans of Montreal claim it came from Montreal. Toronto fans claim it came from Toronto.
Of course.
All of them are wrong.
Oh, yeah?
It didn't come from hockey. It didn't come from soccer. A hat trick goes back to late 1800s from cricket. It is a cricket term.
What a sticky wicket.
And
Commonwealth friends.
And this has been verified. There are a lot of citations. It really did mean, originally, in cricket, a bowler who takes three wickets in three successive balls.
Okay.
After which he would be presented by his club or the fans or the boosters with a new hat. It really was. And now keep in mind, once upon a time, men wore a lot more hats than they do now.
And hats were very expensive.
And hats were not cheap. And a nice, you know, bespoke hat could be a big deal. So yeah, cricket. We get it from cricket all the way into hockey and soccer with a hat trick. You'd be rewarded with a hat.
I want to see what kind of hat. If it's like a top hat or like a...
Well, if it was a bowler hat for the bowler.
Oh, indeed. It might have been.
No, I looked it up.
Wait, what was it like?
I looked up the bowler hat to see if there's any sport connotations.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, you're right. So anyway, hat trick now, any kind of three of anything in a game, sort of loosely a hat trick. But yeah, the traditional hat trick is three goals.
Cricket.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. Well, you guys know more sports slang than maybe you thought.
Five bagger in the five hole.
Yeah,
Four bagger in the five hole. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like what it is.
Well, there are a lot of golf terms, right? Like golf.
Albatross.
Is
birdie, albatross, eagle. Yeah.
Condor.
Condor.
Yeah. What is that thing?
Yeah.
The honey guide.
Yeah. That would be amazing.
You just go around randomly
you
dropping
run into
your
the
ball
forest.
Into other people's holes. That's the honey guide. Yeah. Oh, mark myself down for a honey guide on that one. Time to hit the bar.
Yeah.
18 holes, I'm done.
I won.
Took 18 holes, 18 seconds. Time to drink.
All right. And, thank you, Sherelle, for suggesting slangs and giving us a little bit of an intro. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about holes and Kool-Aid Man and all the words that you can use to describe a marijuana cigarette.
Yeah.
You can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, on Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Well, hopefully this episode goes out before our live show, so we'll...
See some of you.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll see some of you. We're kind of nervous. Hopefully... Well, it's sold out. That's crazy.
Well, that's good. There can't be any more people.
We'll report back, and we'll see you guys... Some of you guys in person next week.
Yeah.
Not exciting. If they see us first. Wait.
No,
never mind.
It still counts.
Yeah, they'll still see us.
Yeah.